This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Bipartisanship has been rare on Capitol Hill these days, but one area of agreement across the aisle is transparency in trade talks. While lawmakers aren't directly involved in trade negotiation, they must ultimately approve trade deals the U.S. strikes with other nations and thus the need for transparency during negotiations. The issue came up as the Senate Finance Committee voted last week to advance Biden's USTR pick, Katherine Tai's nomination, to the full Senate. Chairman Ron Wyden.
I also want to work with her on continuing to expand transparency on our trade policy.
Ranking Republican Mike Crapo voted for Tai but criticized her answers to his written questions on trade talk transparency.
Rather than confirming her understanding that the USTR must provide negotiating proposals per statute, Ms. Tai's response noted she will, quote, consult with the Committee on Trade Negotiations, end quote. That is not good enough.
Crapo noted that he and Chairman Wyden are on the same page on transparency, something both parties have sought in the past from administrations of the opposite party. Transparency could become more of an issue as authority expires in July for presidents to speed deals through the House and Senate without amendments, known as fast track or trade promotion authority. And in related trade news, President Biden inherited a challenging relationship between the U.S. and China, including a trade war, tariffs on both sides, human rights issues, and more. A Pew Research survey shows that 89%, or almost 9 out of 10 adults, considered China a competitor or an enemy rather than a partner. Many Americans also support taking a firmer approach to the bilateral relationship, whether by promoting human rights in China, getting tougher on China economically, or even limiting the opportunities of Chinese students to study abroad here in the U.S. Many in the survey also said that China's powerful economy, its dominance as a manufacturing center, sometimes at the expense of its environment and workers, and issues related to the U.S. and Chinese economic relationship are all concerns. Overall, Americans see the current economic ties with China as tenuous. Around two-thirds, or 64%, describe the economic relationship between the superpowers as somewhat or very bad. Just over half of the survey respondents said they have confidence in Biden to deal effectively with China. Bipartisan politics are far apart on the issue. 83% of Democrats say they have confidence in Biden to deal effectively, compared to only 19% of Republicans who say the same. And in a story of non-bipartisanship, the Senate Saturday passed the $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package. The package, known as the American Rescue Plan, will extend federal unemployment benefits, offer up to $1,400 in direct payments to individuals earning less than $80,000, and increase funding for several nutrition assistance programs. Additionally, it authorizes several provisions to bolster rural and agricultural communities, including a pilot program to facilitate the distribution of vaccines and other medical supplies in rural areas, debt relief for historically disadvantaged farmers, and $4 billion to build resilience in the food system. National Farmers Union President Rob LaRue says this legislation provides a lifeline that will help keep families afloat until their hardships subside. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack stated, "I'm grateful to the U.S. Senate for passing the bill," adding that the American Rescue Plan is historic, namely for the transformative debt relief it provides to Black, Indigenous, Hispanic, and other farmers of color. Vilsack says USDA stands ready to use these important provisions of the bill once it clears Congress and is signed into law by President Biden. The relief package passed on Saturday with a slim margin of one vote, with 50 Democrats voting yay and 49 Republicans voting nay. As farmers are ramping up towards the planting season, drought conditions have continued in many of the top corn-growing states. Last week, the U.S. Drought Monitor showed 11% of the Midwestern acres are in a moderate drought. Over half of the High Plains are in severe drought, and 19% of the region is experiencing extreme drought conditions. For example, Iowa, the number one corn-producing state in the nation, faces extreme drought conditions in the northwestern part of the state. Roughly 10% of Iowa is in a severe drought. Soil moisture is more favorable here in Illinois, but the central part of the state is abnormally dry from about Jacksonville to Champaign. A small part of the east central region is in moderate drought. Nearly all of Nebraska faces some type of moisture stress at this point, with the southwestern corner of the state in extreme drought. The entire state of Minnesota is abnormally dry, with about 40% of the state, especially in the northern third, in a moderate drought. Only 9% of the acres in Indiana are in a moderate drought, primarily in the northwestern part of the state. More than half of Kansas is abnormally dry, while drought conditions are severe in the southern half of South Dakota. Ohio and Missouri have much less drought to deal with than other states. About 61% of Wisconsin is abnormally dry, with almost half of Michigan in the same category. In other ag news here on your Monday, Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack addressed attendees of the virtual Commodity Classic event on Friday of last week. Speaking with National Association of Farm Broadcasting President Gail Cunningham with WYXY in Champaign, Vilsack fielded questions including those on the next farm bill.
Well, I tell you, Gail, before we craft the next farm bill, I think we have to work between now and, say, the next year or two to take a look at what we need to do to create more, better, and newer markets and fairer markets. And that is going to help to inform, in part, what a farm bill ought to include. So, for example, if we are able to establish some kind of carbon bank that's designed for and implemented for farmers and benefiting farmers, we do this, I suspect, in a way that we begin that process. We provide sufficient resources to get it started, but also to learn from the early experiences of that, what works and what doesn't work.
Vilsack also spoke to the accomplishments of the Trump administration, including trade with China. The Iowa native says that despite the recent purchases of U.S. commodities by China, some farmers did not make it through the trade war.
Well, Gail, I'm not sure that we can say with confidence that we survived the trade war. I think there, unfortunately, tragically, there were a lot of farmers that did not survive the trade war that ended up having to leave the farm. And that's always an incredibly sad circumstance. I think we have to acknowledge that. I think we also have to acknowledge that where we are relative to trade, especially with China, is pretty much where we were in 2017. So I think we have to put this in perspective. I think the benefit that did accrue is that China did make a number of commitments in the sanitary and phytosanitary area, which had been negotiated and which had been discussed for an extended period of time, which China is now doing.
Vilsack says, among several things, the focus of USDA over the next 4 years will be on building and expanding markets for producers.
I want them to know that we're dedicated at USDA to trying to figure out how we can create better opportunities. More markets, better opportunity, better markets, newer markets, fairer markets, all of which I think will benefit producers across the board. And so I look forward to continuing working with all of you.
The session started with a roughly 20-minute update on work underway by USDA and the Biden administration. Vilsack also spoke on several priorities at USDA, including equity, climate, filling open USDA job vacancies, infrastructure, including broadband, and the pandemic relief. Moving on now into State of Illinois Ag News for your Monday. Last month brought record cold temperatures to the entire country, and central Illinois was no exception. The common misconception of biodiesel is that cold weather limits performance, but in fact, temperatures plunging as low as negative 10 degree Fahrenheit were no trouble for a fleet of ADM trucks that ran more than 23,500 trouble-free miles on sustainable B100 biodiesel in February. The trucks are part of a cooperative pilot program announced in 2020 to demonstrate the real-world viability of Optimus Technology's revolutionary vector system. While nearly all diesel engine manufacturers support at least a 20% biodiesel rating, or B20, the Optimus vector system is designed to allow conventional diesel engines to run on 100% biodiesel in a wide range of climates, even freezing cold. The national pilot project is supported by ADM, Optimus, the American Lung Association, the National Biodiesel Board, the Illinois Soybean Association, and the Missouri Soybean Merchandising Council. Five trucks owned by ADM and outfitted with the Optimus Technologies vector system are being used in a daily fleet of operations, with each vehicle anticipated to travel 160 to 180,000 miles and reduce up to 500,000 pounds of CO2. All biodiesel used in the project comes from ADM's refinery in Mexico, Missouri. ADM's use of B100 during the recent cold snap goes to show just how well biodiesel can operate in winter clear weather. Biodiesel and biodiesel blends are successfully used year-round, even in the coldest U.S. climates. Since 2003, vehicles have logged billions of problem-free miles. That means users can gain economic, environmental, and health benefits of biodiesel all year round. Biodiesel blends of up to 20% should be treated just like petroleum diesel fuel by using cold weather additives recommended by your fuel supplier, while B100 should be paired with technology such as the Vector system when operating in colder climates. A Chicago-based startup company launched Good Sport, which is a sports drink that's 97% dairy and aims to compete nationally against leading brands. The first of its kind natural sports drink is made with the goodness of milk and backed by science. Good Sport will be soon available on Amazon and at goodsport.com, but broader retail distribution is planned for later this year. The product was launched with support from the Dairy Checkoff and other industry groups, including the Checkoff-funded Center for Dairy Research at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. The university showed Good Sport how ultrafiltration could harness milk's electrolytes, vitamins, and carbohydrates and remove its protein to create a clear, light beverage with a mouthfeel that consumers expect from a sports drink. Good Sport also learned how to source its main ingredients sustainably. Dairy companies often ultrafilter milk to use the protein to make products like cheese, but can't use the nutrient-rich part of the milk called permeate. That means Good Sport rescues a byproduct from dairy companies to produce its beverage. Good Sport carries dairy's healthy halo, says Pennsylvania dairy farmer Marilyn Hershey, who serves as the chair of the Dairy Management Incorporated. It's not only offering delicious refreshment and nutrition from dairy, but it also supports the industry's sustainability mission. It's a new way to talk about milk, and it's exciting for dairy farmers. And it looks like lemon shakeups and livestock shows will be returning this year. Fair season in Illinois was non-existent last year thanks to coronavirus, but a U of I Extension 4-H program coordinator says this year looks favorable and kids in 4-H programs will have a chance to compete. Angie Abernathy says they have been advised to plan for in-person shows at local county fairs.
And that might look a little bit different this year, just depending on COVID, of course, and how our numbers are sitting. You know, we're definitely going to be enforcing things such as wearing your mask and social distancing. You know, we may have to set things up to where we have fewer people in the room, but in person is definitely looking like it's going to happen this year.
In a normal year, Illinois will see 104 county fairs and 2 state fairs between June and the third week of September. And according to a USDA report, McLean County is number one in the U.S. for corn and bean production. McLean County corn production last year was 63 million bushel and soybeans at 19.2 million bushel. Here's Mike Doherty, senior economist and policy analyst with the Illinois Farm Bureau.
We are not always number one in both crops. We do grow them on a 50-50 rotation, but sometimes Iroquois County beats us out on soybeans. There's a county down in Mississippi along the Mississippi River, in the state of Mississippi, that south of Memphis, that sometimes can beat us, and there's one over in Iowa. So we aren't always number one in both crops. So this is great bragging rights for us.
Iroquois County between Kankakee and Champaign came in a close second at 5% less corn production. Soybeans were behind by about 13%. Moving on now into local ag news on your Monday, the Highland FFA chapter, along with the Green for Life initiative, will have a used oil drive this coming Saturday. This was originally scheduled for this past Saturday, but again, it will be held this coming Saturday, the 13th, at the Highland Middle School parking lot, and it will be held from 8 till noon on Saturday. Also, don't forget the Macoupin County Ag Education Foundation still has scholarships available for the upcoming school year. The applicants must be a graduating high school senior or a current college student who plans to attend or is attending an Illinois junior college, university, or career technical education program and is majoring in agriculture. Applications are available through a Macoupin County High School guidance counselor, ag teacher, or from the Macoupin County Farm Bureau directly. You can request an electronic copy by email from MCFB at frontiernet.net, or you can call the Macoupin County Farm Bureau office in Carlinville at 854-2571. The applications must be submitted to the Macoupin County Farm Bureau office by Friday, March 26th. And coming up on Saturday, March 27th, the Montgomery County Farm Bureau will be hosting a household hazardous waste collection. It will be held again Saturday, March 27th at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds Butler from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. A list of accepted wastes will be posted on our website at WSMIRadio.com under the Ag News tab and in our community bulletin board, where you can read other community events going on throughout the area as well. Again, the Household Hazardous Waste Collection will be held Saturday, March 27th at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds Butler from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it's sponsored by the Montgomery County Farm Bureau and the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency. And that wraps up our Ag News here on a Monday morning, but remember, you can always send us your Ag News by email at WSMI at WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Monday morning, March 8th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.